You said she was upper class.
Yes, that's all I want to say.
Is there anything else you'd say about...
The easiest way to place her, because I said she was the same class as Mrs. Ashby, I think, and she was. They were old friends. I don't know how or where they met, but I think they'd known each other before, I don't know. Anyway, she'd been married to Mr. Corbett for some time. And then, of course, one of the shattering things that ended the setup as I knew it was that Mr. Corbett died, Adrian Corbett. He died on the same day as King Edward abdicated.
Oh, 1906.
That's how I date that, because Miss Frank, one of the things Miss Franklin used to like to do was to ring me up in the evening and have long, long conversations about whatever was going on. And she rang up one day and said she had such a crisis, she didn't know what was going to happen. The king has abdicated and Mr. Corbett has died.
But she was a good chairwoman, was she? I mean,
she was a very good chairman, yes. She wasn't a university woman. She hadn't been to Newnham. Roughly speaking, the only people on the committee who were educated were the people who'd been to Newnham. But she was very well read, very well educated, very intelligent, and very nice
looking, like her sister-in-law.
Yes, and very sensible, very much got her feet on the ground. I think she was cleverer than many of us at knowing what the guilds would take, what the committee would take. I think she knew, and she's a very good chairman. She used to listen very quietly to everybody and then say what she thought of it in the end.
Another person who was quite prominent was Miss Loring, wasn't she? Who was she? Because she becomes really quite important by the time of the Second World War.
She was the person who was pushed in by Miss Franklin to take the place of Mrs. Corbett when Mrs. Corbett had left. And she wasn't a good chairman, I gather, from what I still heard in rumours of what was going on.
You'd left by that time.
I'd left by that time. Mrs. Corbett and I left together.
I see.
The question of standing again for the next election, and I'd already been pushed out from being treasurer, and I wasn't wanting to go on just being an ex-treasurer, and so I said I didn't want my name put down for the next ballot. And Mrs. Corbett was going to go on. She was delicate by then. She'd had this treatment for the cancer, and I think it was beginning to come back again. And she said, she wanted me to go on, but she said if I wouldn't go on, then very soon afterwards she withdrew her name too. And then they didn't know who to put in. And one person they thought of was Lady Reading.
Oh, yes.
And either at that point or at another point when Mrs. Corbett, of course, Mrs. Corbett was delicate for several of those years, and so several times the question as to whether she was resigning or whether she wasn't resigning or whether she was too ill to come came up. And on one of these occasions, there was talk that a suitable person to be the new chairman would be Lady Reading. And we had I was at a very amusing interview, it must have been when I was treasurer, because I shouldn't have been allowed in otherwise, a very amusing interview at which Lady Reading came to call on us to see the office and see the setup and talk about it. And Lady Reading and Miss Franklin talked about the chairman and what was expected of her and what she'd do and all the rest of it. And it was quite obvious to me that Miss Franklin didn't mean to have anyone as chairman unless they were someone who was prepared to be bossed by her. Quite obvious that this is Lady Reading didn't mean to come in and be chairman of any unknown people unless she was coming in as the reforming person who was going to put them all in order. And so they never got any, further proposal. That was a very funny.
But Miss Franklin, why didn't Miss Franklin herself become president, really? Do you think she was aiming at that in the long term?
I think she must have been, except that she had this curious
sort of lack of self-confidence.
Mm. She certainly wanted to be put the power behind the throne, and most of the time, and she was for some time the power behind the throne.
Mm.
But she wasn't a very, and of course we had got Lady Cynthia Colville as our decorative president, so there was no reason why she shouldn't have been. There was no reason why she shouldn't have come in as president when Mrs. Ashby went out as chairman.
Maybe she just felt she was more powerful behind the scenes than on the front stage.
It may be. Yes, of course, we're not talking about presidents now. We're talking about chairmen. It was chairman that Mrs. Corbett was.
Mm.
And chairman that Lady Reading, I suppose, was going to be.
Mm.
And it may be that although she was so anxious to have everything her way, she may not have wanted to be the person who did the actual taking the decision that the chairman has to do.
Mm.
It may be that she only wanted to push her way and let Mrs. Corbett.
Mm.
I don't know.
Did she have a presence? I mean, would she have been a dignified figure? I mean, what was she like to look at, sort of thing?
She was like, so many little. So many middle-aged Jews. No, that's what I was meaning when I said I thought perhaps she only wanted to be the pearl and not the show person, that I don't think she wouldn't have been nearly as decorative on a platform as Dame Marjorie. And I think it may be that part of this lack of confidence was that she felt that. She may have been more sensitive as looking. No, it was rather curious. Just a day or two ago, somewhere in Cambridge, I was coming out of the library or coming out of somewhere, and I met a little middle-aged Jew who looked so exactly like she used to look like that I suppose it was after I got your letter and I got this in my mind. And I saw her coming out, and I thought, goodness, that's Miss Franklin coming, because...
She was quite small, was she?
Well, she was not nearly... She was not as tall as I was. I don't say she was quite small, but she certainly wasn't as tall as I was. And, of course, Mrs. Corbett was definitely tall and dignified and decorative-looking.
So perhaps she knew in her heart of hearts she wouldn't have filled the role, really?
I think she wouldn't. I think probably she, but as I say, I didn't know it. I couldn't understand her fully at the time.
Mm. One thing we've been sort of almost hinted at all the way along is the headquarters. This was before you went to Cromwell Place, isn't it?
Yes, I left at the time when they were planning the move to Cromwell Place. Our lease was certainly running out at Great Smith Street, and I'm not sure it hadn't actually run out, because
What was there at Great Smith Street? You said there were just two offices, were there two office rooms? Or
it was a little.
Can you describe it?
It was
me?
A little temporary hut that someone had pushed into a bit of garden. Behind what? I really don't know now. Of course, it's all big, tall Victorian office blocks there. I rather think their corner's gone now. It was a corner just near the Abbey. And behind one of these big office blocks, they'd had a little bit of backyard, as all those Victorian houses in London had. And someone in the war had put a little auxiliary office there. It was a one-story temporary building, and like so many temporary buildings, it was hanging on beyond what was supposed to be its time. And it was divided into about four small rooms. There was one that was just large enough to get the committee around a table. I think it was about the size of this sitting room here.
Mm.
And it wasn't as big as committee rooms go, but it had one long table down the middle and you could just get people around it. And then there was one that was the office that Mrs. Horton and Miss Franklin sat in with all the files. And there was one that the treasurer, we had a professional bookkeeper who did the bookkeeping. That's why I didn't mind being treasurer, because I didn't have to do the bookkeeping and the financial ledgers and things. And I think there was about one more for the junior staff and the waiting room, goodness knows what. But it was all just divisions in this
way. With a corridor down one side, was it? Or how did you get into these rooms?
Well, I think the two end rooms you went into at the end, and they cut off the two ends to give them a slightly larger width. And I think the middle rooms with the treasurer, and I'm not sure we didn't let one, though, how he managed to let one. Mm-hmm. So small a space, or who he let it to, I don't know. But I think there was a junior staff, and of course there was a certain coming and going of outside organisers too, who wanted a place. But you see, that if you could put a door and a corridor in the middle bit with small rooms in the bit where the corridor was, and then get the full width at the two ends for the two bigger rooms.
It was a very large place, really.
I should think the whole place was about the size of this flat. It's about the number of rooms that are in this flat.
Yes.
They're rather differently arranged.
Did you go to Women's Service House for your meals at all? I mean, you remember the London Society for Woman Suffrage?
Had a place in a basement.
Mm. I wonder whether you went there at all.
Yes, we used to go there, and I could get what was a cheap meal for women workers in the neighbourhood. And some of the time, I don't quite know why, I was so hard up for cash that I didn't even go there. I used, at one stage, I used to take sandwiches.
Mm.
That must have been in summer. I couldn't have eaten sandwiches outside in winter.
Mm.
But
did you have any connection with the National Council for Equal Citizenship after the split, really, or were they quite separate?
Quite separate. The split absolutely.
I see.
So absolutely that, as I say, they disappeared from my knowledge, and I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah.
I think the thing was that after the split, they didn't continue as a society altogether. I don't think they had
They didn't have branches.
Have meetings or rallies or branches or anything. I think they had a certain
pressure group, really, that's all.
I think they had a certain number of old friends who were a pressure group, and I dare say they had a magazine.
Mm.
I don't know. I didn't take it.
Mm.
And I think if they wanted to run a pressure for something special, I think they used to get up, collect deputations and take deputations to consult the ministers or something.
One thing I wanted to ask you was about the townswoman, because I went to see Mrs. Blanco White the other day, and she said there was quite an argument going on about the management of the townswoman, because some people wanted it to be more political, and some people wanted it to be just like a magazine, recreational.
That was part of the argument for the split. That had been the old magazine of the old National Union, and it wasn't in those days called the Townswoman. They changed the name
Leader, wasn't
to
it?
Town. Yes, it had been the Woman's Leader, And that had spread the news about their feminist propaganda. It's possible that the other half kept the woman's leader and went on leading about feminist things. I don't know. You'll have to ask.
Yes, I don't think so. I think the townswoman was the successor to the woman's leader.
The townswoman was actually the successor for the townswoman half.
Mm.
But I was, after all, a good reason for changing the name would have been that we were letting the paper go to the other half. And I think it's quite likely that the paper went to them.
But you weren't involved in editing the
townswoman? No, I was never involved with anything. Oh, yes, I was involved deeply with the townswoman, but I was never involved with anything to do with the other half, because, you see,
no.
The split came.
Mm.
The split was going on behind the scenes at the date when I first met them at this rally.
Yes.
And it came out in public at the next public meeting in London, where I was very new. New delegate from a new guild at my first meeting, so I knew nothing except what was going on the platform. I remember Miss Franklin coming on me in a corridor, saying, "Oh, have you got the least idea what's going on? And do you understand all this new constitution?" And I said, "Yes." I got a very clear head in those days. And she said, "Oh, well, if you do, you're the only person here who does." This is not the cutting thing she would say.
Mrs. Blanco White edited The Townswoman for a bit, didn't
she? I think she had edited the Women's Leader.
Mm.
And I know she edited, she was called the editor of The Townswoman. That rather offended me, because I should rather have liked to have edited it.
Mm.
But they didn't think I had enough authority to do it, and they gave it to Mrs. Blanco White, and Mrs. Blanco White was rather bad at not turning up.
Was she really? She's a strange woman, actually. I very sort of perverse, in a way. And this peculiar woman, I thought.
She was another... You are digging out some old corpses. I didn't know she was living.
She must be
a good age. She was
six,
definitely older than me.
Yeah.
Was she Newnham too?
I think so, yes.
There was a strong Newnham flavour about it.
Very interesting what you were saying. The most intelligent people were all Newnham people.
I think so. Mrs. Hubbock was Newnham, and Marjorie, of course, was Newnham. And I was, I think. I would have said that was one of the reasons why I was chosen, but I don't think it was, because I think it was certainly Miss Franklin who pushed me. Miss Franklin hadn't got the Newnham interest.
And you were the only three from Newnham, were you? There weren't any others?
Well, I have a sort of idea Mrs. Blanco White might have been.
Oh, Mrs. Blanco White, yes, quite possibly, yes. It's very interesting that, actually, one Cambridge college being so influential.
Yeah.
But so you've described the headquarters, that really does bring it to life for me. How did you ever get there, the headquarters? How did you get into that building then? Was it one of the old National Union buildings? Or?
No, it was connected to nothing, not even with this, whatever building it was behind. It was just a sort of gate, a sort of back door. That I suppose it was what in the old days when it was a backyard, they used to take the dustbins out from. One went in there, and then this was a completely separate temporary wartime building with a little bit of garden remained, just a strip, just one flower bed that had those irises that do so well in London.
Mm.
And at the Irish time of year, our garden used to be rather showy with these rather nice London flags. And the rest of the year, it was just a place where cats could walk.
What about council meetings? They became bigger and bigger, didn't they, as time went on, the annual council meetings?
When I first belonged, they used to meet at the place in Westminster.
St. Ermin's Hotel? Or?
St. Ermin's Hotel, I think, was the first one I was at. And there's also a...
Or Caxton Hall, perhaps?
No, you know the Caxton Hall. There's a nonconformist place there. It's not Caxton Hall, is it?
Lance Hall.
It's the Methodist.
Oh,
place.
Central Hall.
Central Hall.
Yes.
And I have been to meetings there, but I don't think those were Townsmen Guilds meetings. Mm. I don't think we ever rose against paths there. I think it was the St. Ermine's Hotel we started it. And then when numbers grew bigger, they moved to various other places. I think you've got the books, but I think of those 5 years, it was almost always in a separate place.
Mm.
There was one in the Friends Hall in Euston Square.
Oh, yes, there was, yes.
And there was one right over in Kensington in the Imperial Institute, which was very uncomfortable. And there were one or two in St. Ermine's Hall. I was going to say we took them out of London, but I don't think we did. I think eventually they took them out of London because London was so expensive.
But you amalgamated the rallies with the annual council meeting about 1936 or 7, didn't you, as I remember?
I think they did. I think that was after I'd...
Just about when you were moving
just
out.
Just about when they were moving. Of course, the big shift was when they moved out of those Westminster offices and everything shifted, the offices shifted, and the things they had room to do changed, and Miss Franklin got thrown out very soon after that. Was during the war? I think, was she there during the war, or was
I
it during the war she was
I
thrown out? And Miss Loring had taken Mrs. Corbett's place. Miss Loring I knew because she'd been at my school. Though just as Dame Marjorie had been at Newnham long before me, Miss Loring had been at school long before me. We'd never actually met, but we had been at the same school.
But she was, in a way, not a slave exactly, but a subordinate of Miss Franklin, was she, Miss Loring? I mean, she was a sort of assistant.
She was a sweet, gentle... I think she'd probably come in as a friend for Mrs. Corbett, because she lived near Mrs. Corbett.
Oh,
But she'd been there. She was a sweet, gentle sort of person who wouldn't quarrel with anybody, and I don't think she'd ever done any... I don't think she'd ever done anything much. She'd never worked as a voluntary organiser or did the travelling about or anything, as Franklin and I did. She was just a committee member. Came fairly regularly to committees, and I don't believe she was an awful flop as a chairwoman, but I don't know anything about that.
Mm.
It all happened after I'd left. I think I met someone who told me that she was their chairman now.
But you say you did a lot of travelling about. You were a sort of organiser, were you then?
I was the first, the second, I think I was the second of their voluntary organisers, so-called. And I did a certain amount of going about. I had relations in up in the north. I had relations in Durham, so I could I got a footing if I wanted to go up and visit guilds there. And I went several times to either to start a guild or visit a guild, or they had a handicraft exhibition one year. I don't know. I used to be back and forwards.
And they'd pay your expenses, I suppose, would they?
I suppose they paid the railway expenses, and I suppose they were very thankful to have someone who could get their board free.
Yes, yes. But did you actually? I can't remember. Was Durham a depressed area?
Yes.
Did you help to establish some of these depressed
areas? I don't think the ones I did were frightfully depressed. I think the one I did was Darlington, which was the one prosperous one place, was a major town there.
Mm.
But I knew something about... Oh, I did know something about the ones on Tyneside, too. I may have been to Tyneside. But...
And Scotland you went to a bit,
Scotland, I did the tour... Yes, I did the grand tour of Scotland, starting with Edinburgh and going right up as far as Wickenthurso, coming back by Glasgow.
It must have been very interesting work.
Oh, it was. It filled in the time.
And you just really set up branches or gave them a boost. And that was your job, really, as organiser.
Yes. The time I went round Scotland was as treasurer, not as organiser. At least I did a sort of one-man band. I went round both as housekeeping expert and treasurer. And I'd speak at they'd have some of these meetings, these all-day meetings, and I'd speak at one of them as treasurer and tell them it's so frightfully important to send some money to the central office, which of course everyone in Scotland hated doing. And the other meeting, I spoke as food advisor and told them how frightfully interesting it was for them to improve their diets. And they always thought all the people who were teaching them to improve their diets knew much less about it than they did.
Because you were, one of your, the things you contributed to the guilds was your scientific background, really, wasn't it?
Yes,
I was. Did they use that a lot? Did they make use of that?
Not as much as I should have liked. It was always push, push, push to get any scientific idea in, and Mrs. Corbett was a great help there because she had a very open mind and was prepared to be pushed, more or less. But of course I was the one scientist there, and I wrote the book of food for them, and that I managed to get one of my old colleagues from Queen Elizabeth's College on the committee, and then she said it was waste her time coming for the committee because she's much too busy to sit and listen to their talking about their own affairs instead of consulting her, but that she was ready to supply the technical knowledge if I wanted. Because, of course, I was a physicist, really, and the thing that interested them was the food and chemistry rather than the physics. And then somebody said, I think it was the Carnegie trustees, said that we ought to take up this question of how these places we were getting so many of in the distressed areas could feed themselves better. And there was very little guidance for the ordinary woman on a proper diet. And I was asked to write the Townswoman's Book of Food for them.
It was one of the earliest of their books, was it?
I think it was. And I'd still got my reader's ticket to the British Museum, and I went to the British Museum and crammed up, surveyed the subject there, and crammed it up and wrote the book of food. I wasn't really an expert on food at all myself, but I managed to get. I always say I was the person who introduced calories to the modern woman, and I'm always sorry that I did. We hear so much about calories now. But when I went up to the British Museum to survey the scene in the museum library, all the books, such books as there were on food and diet, and were definitely so expensive, they were quite beyond recommending to our people. And you see, we were saving all the publishing costs by publishing it ourselves. We only had to cover the printing costs. And so we could do it at sixpence.
And I
found in its science, it's
yes, and it was mainly
rather out of date now, but it was.
I see, and you end up with a series of menus, which
the
have
menus
the right
were provided value. For me by one of the colleges of domestic science who'd been studying menus for the poor, and they'd got the cheap menus worked out, and they were able to provide menus. I think it tells you how to feed your unemployed family, something like 1 and 4 pence a head or something.
It's very practical.
Well, I wasn't so much interested in the practical part as the scientific part.
Yes.
You notice at the beginning that it tells you what a calorie is and that
yes.
You've
very
got
interesting, yes.
You've got to eat the right.
Because this was the period when the whole idea of diet and the science of diet was becoming known. Wasn't
yes,
it?
And it was largely being worked out by the Queen Elizabeth College, because just after I'd written that and published that, the war began and the Ministry of Food, and one of the people I knew who was in the food department at the college went into the Ministry of Food and was the person who did the propaganda and publishing all the rest of it for the Ministry of Food when they began their more
rationing and
more expensive propaganda about the right things you ought to buy, and they spread the cult of calories further.
Yes. And there were other books at the same time. There's one that was a gardening book, wasn't there?
Yes. Having had rather a success with the food and found that they could publish, they thought they'd publish one on gardening, and they had an idea that they were going to publish a whole set for everything, because although we chiefly did it in order to do it small, we did make a very small profit on it, because you see, we had the market.
You've got a captive market.
A captive market, and it was quite a small margin on the printing costs. And you see, we did all the editing and all the proofreading ourselves. It was only the actual cost of printing it, and we could manage to carry that.
One thing that does impress me about the Townswomen's Guilds is they're very, what seems to me as an outsider, very well-organised financial arrangements. They have a budget for the year.
Yes, and how they hate it. And they always say they cannot think why they are bothered with all these rules from London. And I don't think I told you yet, I was going to tell you that after the war, I didn't go back to the Weybridge Guild. I was busy with this technical college and other things. And I have a complete gap from 38 till the early 60s. And then when I came to Cambridge here, I joined the local Townswomen's Guild here in this area of Cambridge and saw a little of what they're doing. Very little, because it's very local, what they're doing nowadays. And there they were grumbling like anything at this elaborate budgeting and all the rest of it. And
which you'd helped to create.
Was all put on to it by Miss Franklin, with Miss Franklin's banking experience, and which I did know was of value, because I knew these various stories, like the lady in Glasgow who stole all the money, various other occasions when things happened. And I used to assure this local guild that it really was necessary to pay the money into the bank, and it really was necessary to keep the accounts right and all the rest of it, because they had no idea what guilds could do, the different things guilds could do where. But you see, in all these places, distressed area places where we were having quite uneducated members, they never handled money at all. And as the guilds grew now, I was astonished when I went back at the amounts of money they are handling, partly to the inflation and partly that their doings are so much more ambitious. I mean, they hire a motor coach and go out and have a day out at Nottingham or what's the name of the place that's got the new cathedral?
Coventry.
Yeah. A trip to Coventry Cathedral is quite a common item in a Cambridge guild nowadays. And by the time you've filled a coach with 40 people and taken all their subscriptions and a comfortable dinner on the way home,
there's quite a lot of money involved.
Merely one outing is quite a lot of money involved.
Did you notice any other major differences between the early days and the 1960s? I suppose
no, because you see, the early days, as I was saying, they were all so very different according to their different origins.
Yes, you couldn't
and
really generalize.
And nowadays, I've not got outside Cambridge.
Yes.
Incidentally, I've even given up Cambridge now, because I don't like going out. I don't see so well in the dark now, and I don't like going out in the dark.
Yes.
But about Cambridge, it's rather a joke that one of the places I interviewed in the early days, again because I could get a free bed, was Cambridge, where one or two people had written in individually to Mrs. Horton to say they'd been Women's Institute members and they thought it'd be nice to have a guild in Cambridge. That's what used to happen. We used to get one or two inquiries, and then when there seemed enough, they'd send someone down to inspect the ground. And I interviewed Mrs. Keynes, the mother of the Economist, and a redoubtable person in Cambridge of those days, and told her we wanted to start at Towns Women's Guild in Cambridge, and she said it was completely impossible and completely unnecessary, and of course Cambridge had everything that any city could want, and they couldn't possibly want anything else. And she crushed the idea entirely, so Cambridge was ruled off our list as not one of the possible places. And when I came back, nowadays, I found they've got about 15 guilds in Cambridge.
Have they really?
All busy enjoying themselves.
That's how you went about things. Well, if you had a few inquiries, you'd go to a key person in the community.
We'd send someone down to the place to interview as many key people as they could get hold of, because the great idea of this democracy was that it wasn't to be connected with any one line or any one sort of thought. So you went round the place and you interviewed the people who you were told, the people who'd asked you to go, and the people who you were told were key people. Sort, and if there was any prospects in it, you got introductions from one to another, and then a professional organizer went in and organized it to the professional pattern.
You'd have a public meeting. Appoint a committee, and then you'd be off.
The committee'd have to be elected strictly according to Franklin's rules and all the rest of it. And now they've got a very elaborate setup with people who are trained in order to be these organizers, and have to keep an eye on the guilds they've organized for a certain length of time, and have to turn up to run the elections. And the elections all have to be run just like a parliamentary election, with ballot boxes, which I always think rather silly, seeing how every other society in Cambridge just puts its hands up vaguely, but the Downs Women's Guilds all have to have their names called. It's even more formal than a city election, because they have your name called out and go into the ballot box and solemnly put your cross down on a piece of paper. And
So it's become really quite an elaborate affair now.
Yes, the rules are from... It's many rules.
One person you were talking about earlier was Mrs. Van Griesen. She was a wealthy person.
She was another wealthy Jew, yes, of the older generation.
A Jew? Was she another one?
Yes, she was a friend of the Franklin Circle. And she was quite wealthy, and she lived... I forget where she lived, but she had a house. It was large enough to have meetings for raising money in and that sort of thing. I think she was one of the people that dated back to the old suffrage days. She'd one of the people who'd been on the committee of the National Union in the old days. And then when she felt unable to be treasurer any longer, they tried one or two of the people out of the guilds who were completely unable to manage the accounts. They didn't have to do the technical accounting, because we had an accountant, but they had to understand the finance. It was very shaky finance, and that was quite beyond them. I was rather annoyed that they always chose them instead of choosing me, and then
And they did choose you, didn't they, in 1935, I think.
Then, I suppose Miss Franklin thought she'd like to have somebody who understood what they were doing, and they did make me treasurer. And then I think she found I knew much too much about it, and she succeeded in throwing me out at the end of only a year, which really wasn't fair, because a job like a treasurer, it takes quite a year to learn the...
Yes, I would have thought not in the
ins and outs of doing it, and generally people are so unwilling to do it that if you've got someone who will, you're very thankful. Mm.
So you did it for a year. They had an elaborate system of forecasting, didn't they, where they said, well, we'll need this much money to spend in the coming year, we want therefore to have this is your quota to the various branches.
Yes.
Various guilds.
Yes.
It was really quite a sophisticated...
It was very elaborate, all of it. Mm. And they had to pass their budget at the annual meeting. And yes. Of course, they weren't any of them used to anything of that sort at all. They were supposed to be, I think it was supposed to be a little bit of the education in citizenship still lingering on, that if the government had to know what it was going to spend, the guild had better know what it was going to spend. Mm. But of course, they were the sort of people that were much more inclined to have a jumble sale because they'd got into debt than have a
plan in advance.
A regular plan for regular finance.
One last question occurs to me. Did religion cause any problems much, really? And politics did, insofar as you had to get rid of Dame Margaret Corbett Ashbury.
Well, that wasn't the politics that
really
caused
politics,
to get rid of her. It was the getting rid of her that dragged politics
precisely,
in.
Yes, yes.
And I think if Mrs. Franklin hadn't jumped at the opportunity, everybody else would have turned a blind eye, because I suppose technically the society wasn't allowed to take, in those days, take up part in politics because of this ranking for taxation purposes as a charity.
Mm.
But I think that Mrs. Ashby's plunge into politics was so short and so unsuccessful that no official person, I think it was rates it made such a difference to. I think that under the laws of those days, charities were quite rated quite differently. We didn't have to waste so much money paying the city council for this poor little hut, something of that sort. But anyway, I'm quite sure it was unnecessary. And
but you had to watch the guilds quite a lot to make sure they didn't get too strongly.
Yes, they didn't do to me. But I don't think most of them were politically minded. It was only one or two of the places where the older political people remained, but that was only they were most of them feminist rather than political.
But religion didn't really cause any trouble at all, you think?
Well, any troubles, they were all so different that any troubles it was were local. I dare say there were some places where they got across the only thing that exists in most of these places was the Mothers' Union. And of course, if the Mothers' Union was being run by the local vicar's wife, it's quite possible that one or the other, they did something that might have upset them, but those things were mostly local and, if necessary, dealt with by Miss Franklin dashing down to see what was going on. I don't think, from the headquarters point of view, anybody ever bothered about our religion. Nobody bothered much about our politics either. Nobody bothered much about us at all.
Well, you've given a really marvellous picture of the whole thing. Is there anything else you think I ought to be aware of? I mean, about the way the Towns Women's Guild ran and what they were about, than we've said? We've covered a lot of ground, haven't we?
I don't think so. I think the great characteristic of those days, as I say, was that they were so utterly different and so entirely unknowing of the sort of things that the Women's Institute did. I mean, whether you did or didn't want them to be like the Women's Institutes, the fact was that they just weren't. I remember among the many miscellaneous things I did, I helped set out their first Townswomen's Guild handicraft exhibition.
Yes.
And the Townswomen's Handicrafts was just like a jumble sale, just like setting out a jumble sale. It was terrible. There was no, from the intellectual point of view, there was no style in it, no influence of the Women's Institute. Beautiful old English crafts and all the rest of it. It was just the things they happened to have knitted or crocheted or sewn. And if they'd done any embroidery, it was those terrible embroideries that you don't see so much now, if you bought in a shop ready to be embroidered, you know. And then after that, we got a bit of Carnegie money to be spent on educating, and we appointed rather a good professional handicrafts advisor who gave advice on how to do the different crafts, and went round lecturing to girls.
Yes, one person actually they advised me to go and see was a person called Miss Morgan, who lives in Hendon now, who was quite connected with the crafts in the early years, they say. I went to the headquarters, you see, and asked
Was that her, or
Mrs. Morgan, it could be.
I can't remember.
I don't know who she is. I haven't come across. I haven't met her yet.
Well, you'll be able to check in your early times, women, whether that was the one I mean, or whether that was a later one. But the first one we appointed really was rather good. And she, they thought she was paid for by the Carnegie trustees, and they thought a lot of her. And she was able to. She used to write regularly for the townswoman, and she used to introduce the various things you could do by hand, making rugs and weaving and different things. This flat, by the way, is almost entirely furnished with townswomen handicrafts.
Is it really?
That stool I made for a one of their national exhibitions.
Lovely.
And it's three different designs out of three different places, and I can't remember which is which now, but one came out of a current woman's magazine, and one came out of an early Victorian pattern with a black background that I had among some early Victorian patterns, and the third I designed myself to match and make fill the three up. And I showed it at one of the townswomen exhibitions, and all the people, the judge had to say was that it oughtn't to have had a black background, which made me very cross, because the only one that was an antique pattern had background.
And it shows, it throws
anyway,
it up.
I didn't see why, if I wanted to make my stool with a black background, I couldn't. But it was
There was a sort of political feeling that if women were kept going with their hands, they would learn, they would educate themselves just by doing crafts, wasn't there? They believed
in
some
so.
Sort of...
I think in those days, one just... You see, people had no television. That's the great thing you've got to grasp. I may have written in the magazine that they were going to have television one day, because when I was working at the college, my boss was rather interested in things, and she told me that television was a coming thing, and I ought to do some research in it and get into it, and I never did. But it was very, very much only a shadow in the distance in those days. It hadn't reached the ordinary home at all.
So you had to do other things.
People of every class and kind had a great deal more time on their hands. They didn't just sit looking at television. They really did their handicrafts.
Did you do any work to get women to use new electrical equipment or new cooking facilities or anything like that? I suppose you did, really, with your book on food, really.
Well, on the whole... we didn't press. Well, for one thing, you see, they were all desperately poor with the crisis, the inflation crisis of those days, and we didn't press anything on them. But I did sometimes. In the Townswoman, I wrote little articles on different things. One time, I worked out the difference in cost between a therm of electricity and a kilowatt of electricity. And I got a letter from the electricity people to say that they couldn't fault my arithmetic, but they hoped we wouldn't go on publishing it because it didn't look nice for the electricity. That pleased me very much.
But well, that's tremendously helpful. I must go now, because you must be...